This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll share the latest episode of The Listening Post and discuss the upcoming Ponderosa Stump Festival. Then, another story from Bring Your Own, a live storytelling series. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans. Stay with us. The toll of America's gun violence epidemic is usually measured in lives lost, more than 33,000 each year. Ignored almost completely are the many more people who survive a gunshot. This month, The Listening Post talks with New Orleanians who are in recovery from their own gunshot wounds.
Welcome to The Listening Post. I'm your host, Thomas Walsh.
You ever hear like the saying, like your life flashed before your eyes? It doesn't really flash. It's almost like a VHS tape. And as it, you ever pick one of those tapes and fast forward? That's kind of how your life is. And sometimes it stops.
That's Derek Sonny Strong talking about his experience getting shot this past November. Yeah. He was shot 9 times, had to be holed up in the hospital for 2 whole weeks, and another 7 months of returning back and forth for surgeries. He's joining us here in the studio today.
What's up?
To talk about these kind of issues here in New Orleans. Gunshot survivors is the topic of conversation on this month's Listening Post. We're working in conjunction with The Trace, a nonprofit news organization focused on gun issues. They're looking to understand what services survivors need and what troubles they have accessing other certain services. Joining me, of course, as always, is Natalie Yar and Claudia Lopez. Welcome, guys.
Hello. Hi.
And this was a tricky topic to deal with. Claudia, we ran into a couple challenges collecting data, right?
Yeah, initially the first challenge was actually finding people who were survivors of gunshot injuries and also finding people who were comfortable sharing their story, because we've had people text us in this month and say, hey, you know, I'd love to share my story with you, but it's something that my family and I have gotten past, and it's not an instance that we'd like to relive at the moment.
With a topic like this that's so personal, so sensitive, and where we're not all equally affected, we found that it was really helpful, of course, to know people who know lots of people and to have a trusting relationship with those folks. When we talked to the right folks and asked, do you know other people who've been in this position? I had somebody laugh about that because it was so clear. There were so many people.
It's just tough. I mean, Terry, God, you had a bullet in the arm, 2 in the legs. I remember you told me your intestines had to be taken out.
Yeah, man. It was real intense because I was going through a lot of bone structural damage, muscle damage, as well as intestinal damage. So I couldn't eat. And the outside physical therapy centers didn't accept my insurance. So I had to really do my own physical therapy. It's quite hard to really imagine just going through this without having a strong mind. It can really break somebody quickly.
Financial troubles are definitely something that became noticeable to us throughout this month. We had someone say, Dr. Bills, my friend has to pay out of his pocket for someone else's dumb choice. He lost his job due to being in the hospital too long, and there are meds he has to take now.
And it's a complicated set of things. I spoke to Alan Friedman, who's a survivor, and the way he put it was, everyone's wound is different. So what kind of specialist you need, what kind of mental health services you need, whether it's Western medicine, Eastern medicine, that's going to be the solution for you. It's a long road in general. Yeah. And we spoke to other people who weren't being given pain medication because doctors didn't believe that they were really in pain.
Yeah, you've brought up an interesting idea here, Natalie. I had the chance to speak to Tamara Jackson. She's the executive director of Silence is Violence. And she mentioned how the culture at large has this tendency to presuppose who gets shot. Derek, I'd love for you to weigh in on this. But first, let me play this little clip from Tamara.
We victim blame not just at the home or in the community, but we victim blame in the police district, we victim blame at the hospital when a victim come on the gurney. You know, everybody want to assume that every victim that's injured in this city or every crime that happens deserves to happen because you did something wrong or bad.
Derek, what's your experience with that?
Well, it's like, you know, because I have dreadlocks, tattoos, darker skin, I'm often categorized. And I've been doing like a lot of, you know, this community service work, not because of court order or anything like that. This is something that I chose to do, you know. So while I was in the hospital, and I'm hearing how the social worker talks to my parents and my family as if, you know, I'm a criminal. It was just crazy because I would get, like, get well cards from the community centers I organized in. And as the room filled with balloons and cards and candies and stuff like that, I see how my care had became more professionalized. It dawned on me how many lives could have been saved if it wasn't for preconceived notions.
We do have a montage that we put together of a bunch of different people who have spoken with us. We just wanted to kind of get some more people to the forefront for our monthly project, as we do.
If you have a gunshot wound, I don't know of any place where you can go where someone can kind of quarterback for you or can kind of give you the overview and can kind of say, here's the places where you need to help you do that. It seems like it would just make common sense that we would start something like that here in New Orleans so that everybody doesn't have to reinvent the wheel.
The emotional toll is bigger than anything. They have to look at those scars every day.
I see these shooters. You know, I go to Dollar General and I see them getting coals to throw a barbecue. Sometimes I have to go on the other aisle and just cry to keep from taking matters into my own hands because I know I can't do that. God told me, be still.
My ability to do certain things was limited. I wasn't patient with myself.
Post-traumatic stress is a terrible thing. Flashbacks, ugly daydreams, nightmares, and not being told that I'm going to suffer from a mental condition as a result of being a part of some kind of traumatizing situation. Not being told that is an unjust period.
I wish I could have got, like, you know, some therapy like what we sitting here doing now, you know, sitting down talking it over, you know, and let me explain myself to you instead of you telling me what it was about and giving me a pill.
Well, we definitely want to keep this conversation going, and there's a way for you, the listener, to do that. You can text 504-303-4348. Text the word hello to that number, and we will send you a multimedia link to some of the profiles of people that we spoke to over the past month, and we can keep this conversation rolling. Of course, we're still looking for more contributors to this story. I know the Trace is as well. Shout out to Alana Dean and Elizabeth Van Brocklin for their work getting this started and continuing this work. We'd really love to hear from you. TheTrace.org is their website. ListeningPostNOLA.com is ours. 504-303-4348 is the number to text and participate in our survey. We'll look for you next month in New Orleans when we're covering the mayoral election. We hope you'll stay tuned for that and participate. It's all about you and keeping the microphones open. Remember, our microphone is your microphone.
Ponderosa Stump Festival is right around the corner. The multi-day event celebrates the unsung heroes of American music. This year's festival will feature names such as Archie Bell, Roy Gaines, Barbara Lynn, and many others. Here to talk about the 2017 Ponderosa Stump Festival is founder and president, Dr. Ira Patnos.
Welcome to the show. Thank you, Janae. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for coming on. This festival is the signature program for the Ponderosa Stump Foundation. Tell us how that was started.
This was never supposed to really be. I was always a record collector. So what happened was when it was time to get married, I'm not a big fan of weddings. I wanted to make sure we had a good wedding band. So then I decided, let's have some fun with it. So I went through my record collection and decided to try to find a bunch of artists I always wanted to see to come perform the wedding. And this was really in the early days of internet. So it took a little bit of work. Pretty much I got everybody there that I wanted. It was an interesting thing. And then we wound up having a insane wedding where basically it went, which was probably the real first Ponderosa Stomp. And then it ended at 5 in the morning with Classy Blues. So basically it was a crazy night.
And, oh, yeah.
And writer and musician Michael Hurt crashed my wedding and then started calling me and insisting that I start booking these bands because they're not coming to New Orleans. And I was like, I'm an anesthesiologist. I don't have time for this. And he didn't let up. So I said, okay, if we could find a place that we could do it and it could be anonymous so I don't get bothered every month. So we went over to the Circle Bar. We decided to go ahead and form a little organization. And then we needed to get a name for it. So in true New Orleans fashion, we were looking for Mystic Nights of something or other. And I pulled out the Screaming Jay Hawkins record, Feast of the Mau-Mau, and we became the Mystic Nights of the Mau-Mau. And that is how we started.
Now, I wanted to ask, how did the name Ponderosa Stump come about?
So, needing a name, I was looking at the Lazy Lester record, the Ponderosa Stomp, which is the ode to the Angola prison.
Okay.
And I misspelled it, and a little different from the record because I didn't catch it till later, and that became known as the Ponderosa Stomp.
Nice. The Ponderosa Stump Foundation is based here in New Orleans. So let's talk about those local artists that will be performing at the event next weekend.
The first one that comes to mind is Willie West. And Willie West is a real unique cat. He started out being born out in like Raceland, Louisiana. So his first records were very much swamp pop oriented records. And then he moved to New Orleans. And then he worked with two of the greatest producers that the city ever had. He started out on the Frisco label working with Wardell Gozer. And then later got picked up by Alan Toussaint to record from his Disu label. We also have performing with New Orleans Ties, the great Charles Connor. And Charles Connor is unique in that he is one of the last of the great New Orleans drummers that is still alive. He was born and raised here, and Little Richard just saw him on a gig one time and he said, you know what, why don't you come play with me? So him and Joe Tillman, the sax player, went over to Macon. Richard sent him up in some little small motel that they said was such a flea bag. They're waiting around. The next day, Little Richard picks him up and says, I want to show you what I want you to your drum beat to sound like, and takes him down to the train station. And they're standing outside the train station, and the train starts taking off, and Little Richard goes, that's the beat I want. And the thing was, unfortunately, Charles really never got to record with Little Richard much because I would always use the great Dave Bartholomew's studio band with Earl Palmer on drums to back Little Richard, mm-hmm. except when Little Richard gave up music, what happened was Charles Connor and the band had recorded a demo at a radio station. They took that song and they looped it a few times and they created Keep a Knockin' out of it.
Ugh.
But that's his big claim to fame. He was a drummer on Keep a Knockin'.
Wow. So, you know, the most fascinating thing about this festival is that it's a two-part festival.
Yes.
You not only have the concerts, but you guys are also putting on a conference. Let's talk about how important it was for you guys to include the conference portion of this festival.
Well, one of the things which was is that nobody really knew the artists. So the idea was to have a way for the artists to explain their music and where they came from and help fill in the pictures. The idea was we had a music conference during the day, so you would kind of get the story behind the music in terms of the songs, the influences, where they came from, and what they were hoping to achieve. And we would do that with oral histories and also panel discussions. And then the idea is, okay, you learn about the music, and then at night you'd get to go see the actual music that they were talking about. So really complemented each other well and kind of made it a unique festival for that reason.
That sounds like the type of homework I would want, right?
Yes, it's a good homework, actually.
Are there any artists that will be participating in the panel discussions at the conference that won't be performing?
Yes, we have a few. One of them, of course, many people will be interested in, is Mary Jane Hooper. She was kind of the unknown funk queen of New Orleans. In the late 90s, early 2000s, some of her material was reissued, and everybody was going crazy. And a lot of the crate diggers, as they called the guys that go looking for vinyl for all the DJs, would then start pulling that out, and the DJs were getting into around the world, and she kind of became like a cult-like figure for many, but no one really knew where she was, and she kind of just kept a low profile on the singing part. She had been around for a long time, but just no one knew where she was.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk a bit more about how this festival is so unique to New Orleans.
It's unique to New Orleans in that New Orleans is basically this great city that created rock and roll and it influenced everybody. And the stomp, in a way, is looking at how it branched out in terms of its influence. And that, you know, many of these performers either grew up playing music influenced by New Orleans stuff, are from New Orleans, did, or they had session musicians that came from New Orleans that went west or east, such as Earl Palmer, Plaz Johnson. So New Orleans music has been this underlying evolving thing throughout the years. It's influenced everything, and it keeps coming back to, while it's not a New Orleans festival in itself, all New Orleans music influenced everything that came out of it. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes it such a unique thing.
Dr. Ira Patnos is the founder and president of the Ponderosa Stump Foundation. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
The Ponderosa Stump Festival takes place October 5th through 7th at the Orpheum Theater and Ace Hotel New Orleans. For tickets and information, visit PonderosaStump.com. And we're back with more BYO. This story was told on May 11th at the LGBT Community Center and later produced by Lane Kaplan Levinson. The theme of the evening was Sugar in Your Tank. And here Lisa Mount recalls coming out to the world on CNN, except the world already knew.
In 1990, I moved to Atlanta from my hometown in Santa Monica, which is just outside of Los Angeles in California, you know that. I was 26. I was pretty much mostly out of the closet, mostly, most of the time, pretty much. And I was a little worried about moving to the buckle of the Bible Belt from beautiful Southern California. And, you know, those of you who weren't alive in 1990, it was kind of a tense time, right? Ellen was not out, right? Georgia was litigating what later became the Supreme Court case, Hardwick v. Bowers, right? Which basically continued the criminalization of sodomy between consenting same-sex partners. The straight people could do all the friggin' in the riggin' that they wanted, but if the genitals matched, oh, no, 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 no. We even had little buttons that we wore. It said, not tonight, dear, it's illegal. So I'm a little concerned about moving to Atlanta, and then I'm, just after I got there, I'm driving down what they call the downtown connector, which is 75 and 85, which works now. They fixed it, through the middle of downtown Atlanta, and I look up, and I see this billboard with this big American flag, and underneath it, it says, Gay America Loves You. I'm like, wow, buckle the Bible Belt, y'all are smart about your messaging. Okay, I could feel a little more comfortable here. And I got a little more comfortable after that when Martin Luther King III signed our Pride Day proclamation when I marched with my garden club, the Digging Dykes of Decatur, Georgia's only lesbian garden club. And, you know, I began to get sort of into the queer community in Atlanta, and I was feeling pretty comfortable. And I had moved to Atlanta to be the managing director of Seven Stages Theater, still a functioning theater and a really bitchin' cool place. And so I got into the arts community, and I was doing a little organizing and a little work, and I got on the board of the Atlanta Theater Coalition, and then I became the president of the board of the Atlanta Theater Coalition, and then Cobb County. Commissioners of Cobb County decided that no more public funding would go to arts organizations because Theater in the Square, no longer a functioning theater now, but then a happy theater run by a gay couple in a very conservative community. Theater in the Square had had the temerity to produce a play called Lips Together, Teeth Apart by Terrence McNally, which included a discussion of two men kissing each other. They didn't actually kiss, but they talked about two men kissing each other. And the Cobb County Commission was desperately offended, and how could this be? Our public money cannot go to something so indecent, and so they cut out all funding for the arts in Cobb County. Well, the queers rose up, and the theater people rose up, and the arts people rose up, and I remember very distinctly talking to the board chair of my own theater at the time, who was a gay man who wasn't so out of the closet because he worked in business, but he was a smart strategist, and he said, get them where it hurts. Figure out a way to boycott Cobb County. And I went to this queer theater, all the different kind of folks coming together, organizing meeting, and I stood up and I said, you know what we really need to do? So we need to organize a boycott of Cobb County, and not just any boycott. We need to organize an Olympic boycott. No Olympics in Cobb County, if this is the beliefs that they hold. So the queers marched and rallied. The theaters had stuffers in every single program to send postcards to the Cobb County Commission. There was widespread condemnation. There were community hearings that were on the front page of the New York Times. I got to be on CNN, which was still newish then. Arguing about this with Gordon Weisong, who was the man who had crafted this idiot legislation. He had a little teeny mustache and little bitty blue eyes. And he said, oh, yeah, this is the gay agenda. And I said, the gay agenda is to get up in the morning and feed our cats, man. We just want to live. Right? And right before I did the CNN thing, you know, they pre-qualify you. They have you talk to a producer, right? And so I'm talking to the producer, and the producer says, okay, so, you know, we're going to identify you on air as a lesbian activist. And I was like, yeah, I'm cool with that. Yeah, I'm really cool with that. Sure. Get off the phone with the producer. Call my mother. Mom. Two things to tell you. I'm going to be on CNN tomorrow, which is really cool, and they're going to out me as a lesbian. And she says, out you to whom? Everyone already knows. Okay. Phew, got through that one. And it was one of those rare, perfect moments in your organizing life when the goal is clear and achievable, and you know when you have reached it. And we won. There were no Olympics in Cobb County during the 1996 Olympics, which we thought would be the greatest Olympics in the world, and they kind of weren't. But we won in that moment. We came together. We said, yeah, we can do this. We will have rallies and marches and speeches, and we will feel our own power as queers, as artists, and citizens who care. Thank you. That's my story.
The next BYO is tonight, starting at 7:30 p.m. at the Contemporary Arts Center. The theme is The Thing Is, and storytellers will bring and discuss personal objects that hold a certain significance to them. More information at bringyourownstories.com. And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Follow me on Twitter at Miss Janae Pierre, and feel free to tweet comments or questions. Would you like to suggest a guest or topic? Send an email to Janae at WWNO.org. That's Janae at WWNO.org. Visit our website to check out previous shows, and be sure to catch us next week, right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us. Support for New Orleans Public Radio comes from the University of New Orleans. UNO grants bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in business administration, engineering, liberal arts, education and human development, and sciences, as well as interdisciplinary studies. More at uno.edu.